You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off.
IGN Playlist is a new home to your game library. Rate games, share lists, and log your game time powered by How Long to Beat. Sign up for early access today at playlist.ign.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Tina Amini.
Hello from my couch.
Hello there. We consider the mess pardon. Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And Sam Claiborne.
Oh, man. I love a little bit of good prop comedy. It's good stuff.
Great show for you today. We're going to talk about a couple hardware delays. Both Steam Deck and Playdate are delayed. Sorry, Christmas.
What? I didn't see this. I didn't know Playdate was delayed.
I know. It's
such a delay. Yeah.
Christmas is ruined. I know. We've got a question about introducing someone to Ocarina of Time for the first time and best practices to do so. But first, It's that time of year. There are lots and lots of games coming out all at the same time. Lots of old games are back. Skyrim is back. GTA is back. KOTOR is back. But the game of the moment is undoubtedly Forza Horizon 5. And I am here to report that I've never played a Forza game before. But I felt like now, especially since it's on Game Pass, and everyone is talking about it. Everyone is singing its praises, even people who don't play racing driving games saying it's great. So I was like, well, there's no way I can not play this game now. Mm-hmm. And I do not care about cars. I do not care about driving, but I can report to you that I love it. It's so fun. I'm having a great time with it.
I think it's made exactly for the type of person that's not like a super hardcore, you know, racing car guy. Although, it does have, you know, if you're a car enthusiast, like you can do all the tuning and all the really hardcore stuff too. But like, it's clearly made for people to just bop it and have a good time. Like, you don't need to be a super fan.
Yeah. I know, Justin, you're playing it. Sam, Tina, have either of you checked it out?
Not yet, but man, with everybody going on and on about it, even people that I did not expect to like, you know, I guess traditional racing games are enjoying it, might just have to.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's on Game Pass, so why not? Sam, how about you?
Yeah, I played through the intro segments so far. I haven't done anything past that yet, but, you know, it looks good on a new TV and on these new consoles, which is nice. I'm terrible at it so far. So I'm looking forward to kind of learning the controls and stuff. But that rewind button is pretty nice.
You know, every game should have a rewind button.
I couldn't believe it was in it, actually. I love Burnout Paradise. Like that game, I really, really liked it. So I know these are the spiritual successors to that type of arcade open world racer. And I've just never, they always come out at the time where I'm like, I should be playing all of these games, but I can only get to a few. So I haven't. And this is the one I'm going to try. Right. But yeah, having a rewind button.
Why doesn't Metroid Dread have a rewind button? Why not Last of Us 2? Just put a rewind button in everything. Man, it's all I do. That's all I do is play that game. My kids haven't been fed or bathed in days. No, I'm really, really hooked on it. And I was absolutely loving Guardians of the Galaxy. I still do, but it's just been completely, completely usurped and put on the shelf thanks to Forza. I can't get enough of it. And the moment it's time, game time for dad and the kids are in bed and stuff, bam, straight back to Forza.
Yeah.
I think there's 80 or something race events, and I've done 50 of them now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Tina, are you still playing Far Cry 6?
I haven't in a minute because Sam and I are pretty dedicated to co-oping that game. So yeah. We both put that on a beat for a second. I'm playing a lot of Ratchet and Clank hilariously, finally. And I really love it. I'm kind of in this mode of playing a bunch of games that we've talked about that I just haven't gotten to because it's mid-November. We're getting to the end of the year and voting sessions. And I'm on a bunch of Game Award podcast episodes where we talk about a lot of those games. So I want to be as knowledgeable as possible. So I've been playing Death's Door, Inscription. And then, yeah, I feel like I'm towards the end of Ratchet and Clank. And of course, a little bit of sprinkle of Zookeeper World as well. I think I've got 5 levels left to get a gold star on out of 250.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I asked about Far Cry 6 is just that Forza Horizon 5 is an open world game with a lot of, it's just a lot of similarities in just in that there's a giant map and a million things to do and unlock and collect and discover and upgrade. So you're just constantly, the game's just constantly feeding you with little goodies and fun stuff. I like that. It's the type of game that just by playing the game, you're unlocking stuff and earning stuff passively. I'm just driving to my next goal, but in doing so, I'm earning experience and collecting skill points and knocking down signs that give me more experience and all that stuff. So
It also has jungles and shit in common.
Yeah, that's true.
The game, I have a live game help tip for you where the game has these fast travel billboards where you crash into them and it's super confusing. What I thought it was doing was unlocking fast travel points, but it's not. You can fast travel, to any of your home, sort of the main bases anytime in the game. And the more of those billboards that you find and crash through, it reduces the cost of the fast travel. And then if you smash through all 50, it makes fast travel free. So interesting.
Oh, well, you can find all 50 of those points and 200 more of the other XP signs on our map. They're all done. I've been working on that with a couple of freelancers. It's really amazing.
And what it is super amazing, what's doubly amazing about that, is that that's DLC they're trying to sell you.
It's $2 or something.
I don't know, man. Forza is actually pretty good about DLC. Really, really meaty. They have a season pass, and they always do, of just really great DLC that makes meaningful additions to the game. But big publishers can't help themselves but kind of sell stuff like treasure maps that should be free.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in addition to those maps, we have little videos and starting places for the jumps, which are really hard, I hear, from some of them. I am also still playing Guardians. I think I'll probably finish it tonight. I think it's amazing, and that's why I haven't been able to put down Guardians to play Forza yet. I want to get through it. I've also been playing a few other games too. I played a lot of Kena, actually, Bridge of Spirits, which is, not really my thing, but I played through a lot of that. I'll get to that. But Guardians, though, man, it is so well written, and I don't want to move on sometimes because I just want to hear the characters acting and writing just play out. It's so well done. And I think it's on the level, writing and acting-wise, of any game, of a Rockstar game, of a Valve game from back in the day. It is that impressive to me. Definitely on par with Sony games like Last of Us and Uncharted and stuff. And the reason I'm saying that is not because, there's one particular reason, and that's that I think these characters are not great. I don't like Guardians of the Galaxy, and I cannot stop wanting to know more about this game, this universe, and these characters and hear them interact. I just don't care about them at all, until this game. Movies are some of my least favorite Marvel movies. And I love this. I just think it's just so, so well done.
There's so much more depth to the characters. I think that's part of like, I like the Guardians movies, but they are, like, in some moments they can be very one note, like particularly Drax. So the fact that they get a little bit more depth and you get to, you know, see the multifaceted parts of their characters and their arcs, because they're all about, like, you know, we're a ragtag group of former criminals, but also we've got heart and we can improve. Like, that's kind of the general, like, you know, gist of Guardians of the Galaxy, if I had to give, like, the elevator pitch. So there's so much more of that visible in Guardians of the Galaxy, in Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, I should say.
Did you finish it, Tina?
Oh, yeah. I finished it a while ago. I burned through because it's like a 15-hour game or so, which is, in my opinion, like, kind of a pretty ideal amount of time for a story-driven game like this. Doesn't overstay its welcome. It doesn't leave you wanting necessarily more, although, you know, for a good game, you always want more. But yeah, it's such a perfect bite size thing. So yeah, you should absolutely finish that first before you move on, Sam.
I was loving Guardians of the Galaxy and I would love to finish it, but I ran into a bug that's completely stopped. I can't progress further in the game.
Oh no.
And you tried to, like, yeah.
I've reloaded a former save. It didn't work. It's deep in the game. Boy. It's when we've encountered Mantis, who I have to say is just as obnoxious as she is in the movies. and it's when she's like riding Drax on Drax's
back
and sort of controlling him on that planet. And there's just a spot where I need Groot to lift up a platform to get me higher, and Groot just won't come do it.
Yeah, that one's a little finicky in general, actually, that particular command. So I've had to approach it from different angles and, like, you know, look at it with the camera in a couple different angles to, like, really get it to work. It can be pretty finicky.
Yeah, I don't know. I've watched gameplay of that moment on YouTube and in other people's games. He just comes up and does it, but he will not do it.
Oh, man.
So I don't know. So I bounced off it and now I'm playing. And I do want to say if they patch Guardians, I'll totally go back to it because I was really enjoying it a lot as well.
And you're close to the end, yeah.
I do have one, like, Forza. I've probably never said this about a racing game in my life. I do think it's on my game of the year shortlist. Like, I'm enjoying it that much. I can't get enough. Like, one odd thing about it is that it doesn't really have any sense of progression. Like I said, I've done 50 races, and race 50 feels the same as race one. Like, I get, you know, Playground's in a little bit of a tight spot where I don't think they want to force people to race, you know, these C-class Beetles for like 5 hours before they start to get good cars. But like, I had like a McLaren, like I had a supercar from like the very beginning and like a really, really good dirt off-road car. And like, you can use that same car for the entire game. Like, it swings the pendulum so far toward player freedom and play however you want, you know, take any car into any event. You set the difficulty. Like, I want the AI to be easy or medium or hard. Like, it's all adjustable. Like, you have complete power over everything, and you don't unlock more events. You don't unlock more any, like, it's all just there from the start, which is cool and really empowering and makes the game feel like a playground. But it does mean that, like, if you want to have variety and like experience different cars and experience different handling, like, you have to kind of take that on yourself. And that's the exact opposite of a game like Gran Turismo that, you know, made you do these license tests and sort of really slowly and steadily built up your skills as a racer. Like, Forza, it's absolutely not that game. Like you can use the same three cars for the entire game. Oh. And that bums me out a little bit, actually. It's just odd. It makes it feel less gamey.
Hmm. Well, there is something about Forza that annoyed me very much right from the start. And even though I'm really dug into it now and enjoying it, it still is baffling to me. And that's that you cannot move the camera up or down while you're driving.
Mm-hmm. There's different camera angles. There's preset ones.
Yes, but you don't have full control of the camera while you're driving. You can only swirl it on the X-axis. And I mean, like, maybe Forza's always been that way. Like I said, this is my first Forza game, but like, when I jumped in, I was trying to control it like you would a car in any 3D game, like Grand Theft Auto, where the camera's behind your car. You can swing it all around, look up and down, but like, you just can't do it in Forza. And I think it's crazy in a game with so many accessibility settings. And like Justin was just saying, like, you can adjust individual colorblind settings for different colors, but you can't move the camera up or down.
Yeah, maybe that is a little odd. I mean, that didn't bug me because I found a preset that like worked for me with like, there's a few that are like tight behind you and some that the camera is a little bit higher in the air. And those presets were enough for me. But yeah, I mean, odd.
I got over.
I'm trying to remember like how standard. Well, because you know, there's a very particular like formula, and the presets are those formulas of like typically what players enjoy when they're playing racing games. And it's been a minute since I've played one, but I can't remember if that's so consistent in the genre or not, or if it is always those like three presets.
Yeah. I got used to it. I got over it. But Sam, I was also very, very bad at the beginning. And what I did, which enhanced my enjoyment of the game immensely, is I turned on assisted steering for a while until I got used to it. Because the game doesn't really explain that you're supposed to brake when the blue line turns red. I mean, I get it. It seems obvious now, but the game isn't explicit about it. Mm-hmm. So I turned on assisted steering just for a while and like did several races and events and got used to it, then turned it back to standard steering, and I was much, much better at it.
You know what the game does, by the way? Like, I won, like, it defaults to, like, average, you know, Drivatar difficulty, and I won a bunch of races in a row, and it's like, hey, it looks like you're winning really easily. Do you want to bump it up to above average? And I was like, yeah, okay. And then I continued winning. Like, I've played quite a bit of Forza. So then it's like, hey, you're still winning a lot. Like, do you want to bump the difficulty up to, you know, whatever's next, like highly skilled? So it's like the game will prompt you to kind of try to find that sweet spot of you know, it wants you to be pressed, but not, you know, not losing all the time. And when it did prompt me that second time, I said, no, thank you. I'm happy to just keep. I'm really just here to win. Like, I don't need it to be that close.
What a complimentary notification. I'm used to like my Apple Watch telling me like, are you sure you're working out right now? Or like Netflix being like, you're really watching a lot.
it will do the opposite too. It'll be like, hey, you know, do you want to bump the difficulty down? Like it'll do that.
Is there handbraking type, like sliding type stuff in a game like this?
Yeah, there's street events and dirt events, and the dirt events are all about drifting. And yeah, you can e-brake.
Mm, okay.
Drift all around, and there's drift, you know, arcade events and stuff like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's so good. I'm going to play as soon as the show's over.
Yeah, it's like a good game. It's like a game that I can play in front of my son. He's into cars like so many kids are, and he just will watch me drive around. So
yeah, my daughters both excitement. They kept commenting on how unfair it was that I could rewind. they're like, what? Like, that's not fair. You should that's cheating. You shouldn't be able to do that. I'm like, this is my game.
Until they play and then they want the rewind section.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what is the penalty for rewinding?
There is none.
Really?
I mean, it's single player. You're playing solo against like AI versions of your friends. You know, so it's not live multiplayer, and obviously you can't rewind in a live multiplayer race. You build up little points that let you level up your cars and stuff. And if you have a combo going, you lose your combo, and that's otherwise there's no penalty of any kind. Like,
okay.
The game's really empowering and player friendly in that way. And it actually makes sense because the races can get kind of long. And they're usually checkpoint based because it's an open world. So you have to go between the flags. And so sometimes, like through no fault of your own, you might just miss a flag. And then it's like, that would completely suck to have to like start the race over. So it's like, boop, easy rewind to just sort of sneak and get on the other side of the flag and make sure you're on the right path.
Damon, because your toddler is watching, are you only allowed to play as like big yellow trucks?
I mean, there aren't a lot of trucks in a game. I was playing a yellow like sports car, so he just calls it yellow car game.
No,
that's cute.
Wants to see the yellow car game. I also played a little bit of Mario Odyssey for him, and now he likes Mario too, so he'll ask for Mario games also.
Aw,
good choice.
Anyway, I'm a convert to Forza Horizon 5, but before that, there was another game that I had become obsessed with, and that was Psychonauts 2. I played Psychonauts 2 for a little bit when it first came out back in August. Then I got distracted by Deathloop and Far Cry 6 and Guardians of the Galaxy. So when I got stuck in Guardians of the Galaxy, I've jumped back to Psychonauts 2, and I love it so much. It's on my short list for Game of the Year. Sam, you've got to play it. Talk about writing. Like, the writing is so good, so funny. And it's a platformer, and it's like it's just endlessly inventive and creative. You're not doing this. You're never doing the same thing from 1 5 minutes to the next. It's great.
And you can change the camera angle. I've actually also been playing Psychonauts 2 as of, I think, yesterday or the day before. So I just started.
Yeah. Yes, you do have full control of the camera.
It's like, yeah. And it's actually very useful because you've got to like jump on very weird things at different moments. So having that camera advantage helps.
Oh, does Raz grow up to get an office job? Is that him?
Well, he's still with the Psychonauts. Well, this is the opening of the game, and I don't want to spoil it. It's a clever opening to the game.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
And I never played the original Psychonauts, and I'm still I'm still loving this one.
Same. They give you like little story moments, and there's a lot of character names and, you know, organizations and stuff like that. But they slowly let you, through dialogue options, like ask people questions too.
Yeah. It's also a game where there's just a million things to collect everywhere.
Oh yeah. So, and then a million different ways to combine them and a million different things to buy to progress your character. Yep. Yeah.
Is it a safe for children game?
Yeah, I think so. It's just goofy. There's certainly no bad language in it.
It's a little maybe creepy to start.
Scary. Mm-hmm.
They even give you a warning message. Like the warning message is a little funny because, you know, it has your typical, you know, there are some flashing lights here and there's some, you know, potentially triggering visual elements here and there. And then it's like, but also if you don't like dentists, like this game might be uncomfortable for you. And actually I really don't. So that was a good warning for me to get prepared.
Yeah. I guess there's some gross stuff. Inside the body stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
Was it Resident Evil 8? Or what game was it where they had the spider, the arachnophobia mode, where you could turn the spider into like a big blob?
Grounded.
Grounded, right.
Or Grounded, whatever. Is it called Grounded?
I think
that game is. Whether you're the shrunken down characters.
Yeah, and like the spider would be reduced to like a sphere with a sphere off of it. It's like,
yeah.
Okay, that's not scary
that's
anymore.
That's really funny. Now, what happened to that game?
It's still in early access. It's still, you know, they're plunking away at it and it hasn't had its full release yet.
Okay.
Well, now that I've made the pitch, I think Resident Evil 8 would be a great game to release.
I don't like zombies or vampires or like, can all these things just be replaced with teddy bears?
That's a good mod.
Yeah.
So like we're saying, just lots and lots of stuff out now to play. Justin, I think you were saying you're going to get back to Skyrim.
Yeah, I would like. I had absolutely no interest in the anniversary edition, but I've been reading up on it. You know, now I dropped today as we're recording this, and I think it's just going to make a perfect Christmas break game. So maybe I'll report back in January. But it's been a long time. Like I haven't played that game in years and years. Like it doesn't feel like it's been 10 years, but it has. And so between all the DLC that I never finished and sort of the quasi official creators club content, like I'm excited to jump back into it and see what's new and experience it on the new gen consoles.
I've never actually finished Skyrim. I played it a lot in 2011, and then I played it a lot early this year when I had my Series X and it was on Game Pass and I revisited it, but I've never actually finished it. Is there new stuff? Should I play the anniversary edition? Okay.
Yes, like they have what's called the Creation Club. It's basically paid mods. So in my opinion, it strikes this really good balance between, you know, like I said, they're quasi-official. These are fan-made mods that Bethesda sort of vetted and, you know, QA'd and made sure like fit, like they're not like janky mods, right? Like they fit into the lore of the game and are integrated well into the game. And you can buy them. Like you can buy this Creators Club content and put it into your copy of Skyrim and it adds new dungeons, new quest lines, new armor, new magic spells, new homes. You know, like one of them is like you can buy and run and upgrade a farm. And that's just a thing you can do in Skyrim now through this paid mod. And the anniversary edition includes all of them. Like there's like 72 of these mods that then you can like pick and choose which ones you want to add. Like I don't like armor sets aren't, I don't care about that. So I won't install that. But like, anything that's like a new dungeon or new quest, it's just like, yep, like let's give me all of it. And like they've been doing this creation club content for I don't know, like 4 years now. So it's like this huge, like I'm looking at the list of like stuff that's added and it's not Bethesda made, but it's still like pretty high quality and vetted by them. So that's what I mean about it striking this good balance of like, yes, I would totally go through like a really well made, you know, mega dungeon that's been like modded into the game by somebody that's a super fan that then was released as a paid add-on. Like that's super appealing to me. And that content totals up, it's like $100 or $150 worth of stuff that all of it's just now included in the anniversary edition.
And I believe the anniversary edition is like a $50 game, but since the special edition is on Game Pass, the anniversary edition is like $17 on Xbox. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the anniversary edition is $50. If you have the special edition, you can upgrade it to the anniversary edition for $50 or for $20 more.
Okay.
Okay. And the special edition is what's on Game Pass.
Right.
So you can upgrade. Yeah, you can upgrade your Game Pass version for $18 since Game Pass subscribers always get 10% off. And really what you're buying, what you're paying for is a bundle of that Creation Club content. That's the only thing that you're getting that's not already in the special edition. Because the new gen upgrades, the new visuals and loading times and stuff, that's like a free patch that everybody gets.
Got it. All right. Well, I'll add it to the list.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I'll say, I know we got to move on to other topics. So I want to shout out that I think the Animal Crossing DLC is like a 10 out of 10. I love it. I'm playing Animal Crossing every day, but we can get into it next week or sometime soon.
Does anyone think they will jump into the GTA trilogy?
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, a no.
And an uncertain?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I mean, at some point I would like to. Those games are pretty fun. You know, it'd be fun to re-experience some of the ones that I played. I beat all those games. So there's a little bit less incentive for, like, I never even beat GTA 5. So like, I just feel weird about it.
Wow. You should play GTA 5 then.
Right.
While I play 1, 2, 3. Yeah, that's my issue, is that I've never, I have a lot to experience with the three of those. So for me, it's like basically playing for the first time. So it's a really good excuse that it's come out. Cool. Yeah. So I'll be spending a lot of time with that and the many other games on my list.
Yeah. I just want to replay Vice City.
That seems to be the popular one that people are picking.
I think San Andreas is the most popular one.
Well, according to a random poll that we looked at today when we were thinking about content to prioritize.
But according to traffic on IGN, it's the GTA San Andreas.
Well, San Andreas has always been bigger, and so we get a lot of wiki guide traffic to that game. The Vice City appeal is just like, it is like a kind of a more of a lighthearted, like funny 80s version of GTA, which I think is super cool. It takes itself a lot less seriously than really any of the later games. And that's saying something, because those games don't often take themselves seriously. But GTA San Andreas kind of did. And Vice City had that soundtrack. So good.
I mean, I think those games are of a moment. Like, I can't even imagine the number of hours I put into San Andreas and like passing the controller around in Vice City with my friends. I don't think they hold up in 2021. Like, I know that the new edition has improved aiming and like some of the really dated gameplay mechanics have been cleaned up, but it's not like a remake, you know, it's just a remaster. And so I don't think they're that fun in a modern context. Like, I don't think they've aged super well as incredibly important and influential and incredible as they were at the time. Like, it's not something that I'm interested in revisiting personally.
Good cheat codes.
Well, yeah, you know, they removed some of the cheat codes.
What?
Yeah.
There's just certain ones that now, and it's new engine, the cheat codes would have broken the game. Something
like. But they said there are some new ones to discover, too. So, that's true. A little bit of a balance.
Discovered
there.
One already. Really? One is Big Head mode, and it's the Konami code.
That's so never good. Had it
before.
In like all of them, all three games, or just one of them?
Yeah, I think that one's universal.
That's cool.
Yeah.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Okay, so lots of new games coming out. One thing that is not coming out this holiday season is the Steam Deck, delayed to, I want to say February 2022. Yes. Does this affect anyone on this show?
Everyone, probably.
Well, I didn't get it.
Professionally,
get a
yeah.
Well, okay, professionally, yeah.
Well, it impacts me personally, then I'll say, because I was really excited about it. I mean, I've got the, I've got a PC, but I like the idea of a Switch version of a PC, as I've been kind of thinking of the Steam Deck in my own head. So I was really excited about it. I think my ship date was originally, actually, it was originally like Q1 of next year anyway, but then it shifted to December of 2021. And I was really excited about that. And now I'm kind of lost as to when I should expect this thing. Might be February, might be March, who knows?
Yeah, I always had a Q1. So I think it was Q1. So yeah, I wasn't ever going to get it, my personal one this year, but I'm extremely excited for it. It's going to be my indie game player, you know, with the Switch is right now.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that I'm able to play through, like I'm playing all these games as catch up. And the fact that I'm able to play so many of them easily is because I have a PC in general. So more portability, like more access, that's only means good things.
Yeah, I still want one. I just wasn't able to get a pre-order in. Mm-hmm. Or if I could, it was going to be like Q3 2022. Right. And I don't really see the point of...
So you're like, forget it entirely.
Who knows if any of us, if planet Earth is still going to be here then.
That's fair.
That Steam Deck, it's such a balance between price and power and, you know, weight. Like, it just really feels like a feat. Like, you know, Valve really hit a home run with it. Like, I chose not to pre-order because, like, I'm kind of interested in waiting for like the Steam Deck 2 or like give me one like slightly upgraded version that's, you know, a pound lighter and 50% more powerful. Like, I think that'll be like the Justin sweet spot. But it's such a positive development. And Steam isn't just big AAA games. You know, there's 100,000 games on there that are all going to run super, super well on the Steam Deck that I think people are really going to love.
But Justin, it sounds like you did have a pre-order in for the playdate.
Yeah, dude, I knew about the Steam Deck news. I didn't see the Playdate news.
Yeah, that was today.
I'm going to wait for the second version. It's a pound lighter.
Playdate.
That's such a bummer.
It is, but it's for a good reason. Because they could have shipped it and then had a bunch of people. I think it was like 9,000 impacted inventory with a battery issue. And so they could have had like, you know, a bunch of people with this battery issue and then done a recall and then fixed it after the fact. And it become like this whole news cycle thing. And instead they like detected the issue and then decided like, you know, we're going to do the right thing here. And we're going to delay to make sure that we have every one of our units comes out with a battery life promise that we had to start. And then of course, there's the shortage issues that's going to doubly impact them, unfortunately.
Yeah, did they? Again, I didn't see the news. Like, I know that the Steam Deck news, which I guess we didn't say out loud, we should say is not due to Valve's some issue with the Steam Deck or some inability to get it out. Like, it's less of a delay and it's more, you know, it's chip shortages like it is across the entire semiconductor, you know, anything that has a chip in it. So is that the same with Playdate or?
No, they actually, there were like 9,000 units or so that they detected had a battery life issue and were clocking in under what they were promising. And that's obviously like a big part of the appeal too, like this like very cute portable thing, and it's going to be actually useful. So I'm glad that they did the right thing and, you know, acknowledged that there was an issue and it wasn't up to par. And so they kind of came out and were really transparent about that. But it's also a little bit because they acknowledge like the shortage issue is still impacting everybody. So while they're going through the process of making sure they get, like, you know, whatever right materials and whatnot they need, and bringing in these units at the standards that they have been promising them at, that's certainly going to be, because they need to go back into the production pipeline and whatnot. And so that's definitely going to be a factor inevitably that impacts them too, like everybody else. Mm-hmm.
There's a strategy that Sega used back in the day for Game Gear where they had it run on 6 AA batteries that lasted about an hour. And they did not include a power cable with the system. So, yeah, that's always a route you can go down. And when they did that, I was really surprised that Sega didn't buy Duracell straight out at that point, because that's what the money was.
Yep. Vertical integration, baby. Yeah.
Also,
quiet Justin, partnership.
Go ahead.
That was it. It was a one-liner.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear it.
It was just like they had like a secret partnership. That was it.
I think there was something like that for that in a few other games. You know, things at the time, you'd be like, you know, powered by, and then it came with batteries. And then, like, you know, you'd have to, like, you know, it was like kind of a, like, always use Duracell when you have your Game Boy, you know, like stuff like that. Justin and Damon both have the exact opposite takes on the future. So Justin's is a light future in which there will be another iteration of
the Steam Deck, like shortly after, not like mm-hmm. 5 years after.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's light future. And then dark future is Damon, in which there just is no future. So yeah. what's the purpose? But neither of them pre-ordered. That's the twist.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same. But then you fall into this trap of like, I don't have a VR headset because I keep waiting for the next VR headset. And then it's like, but now I've just been like, you know, I used to experience plenty of VR in the office, but now I've just completely missed the VR boat entirely, because you just keep sitting on the fence waiting for the optimal moment to jump in. And like at some point, you just kind of have to jump in and just accept that, like, yeah, there's going to be a better thing down the line. So that like made me want a Steam Deck, but I'm choosing to hold off and hopefully there'll be a second revision before too long.
Okay, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like Jonathan from Buffalo, New York did. He says, with the arrival of N64 games on the Switch, the time has finally come for my coworker and I to play Ocarina of Time together. For a long time, I've teased him about never having played the game, although it's no fault of his own. His was a PlayStation household and mine Nintendo. You know how it is. It took a drunken arrangement for me to convince him to finally play the game. I agreed to play through God of War, the original, if he would play Ocarina of Time.
That's the best kind of arrangement. I was gonna say,
that's one nerdy drunken arrangement. Now, God of War has been defeated and the time has come to finally answer the question we've all wondered. Does Ocarina of Time hold up to modern gaming standards, or is it just a beloved game from my childhood? We started last night, and I'll admit I was nervous. I really want him to like the game. Surprisingly, the biggest roadblock for him right now is the controls. He can't get the hang of Z-targeting, and he died a lot in the first dungeon. Leaves me feeling helpless because I want to help, but I don't want to be a backseat driver telling him what to do all the time. Mm-hmm. So my question for the panel is, what's the best way to introduce a beloved older game to a friend who hasn't played it before? Hopefully we stick with it, and I'll have a final verdict on what an adult gamer thinks of his first playthrough of Ocarina of Time.
It's a fair question. I think we're really spoiled these days with a lot of remasters, remakes and whatnot. So you get to kind of, like, you know, more often than not, a lot of things that you might want to show somebody has a new version, which is nice. But outside of Ocarina of Time, because I also can't personally give an opinion on that, I would say to only pick games that actually do hold up in modern times. And I bet you guys have some feelings about that. But the other tip I would give, a more general tip, is also, I've had people introduce me to some games where, not that I'm, you know, not willing to go through from the start, and I can, like, adjust to retro controls because I'm, like, have a general, like, you know, overview memory of them. And it just takes a little bit of practice to get back to the familiar feeling of them, like riding a bike. But for most people, if you, like, play to a point and figure out the save point that, like, launches them in, and then they have less time investment. Cause for me, it's like, I try to get my brothers to play games, and I'll do that sometimes. Cause, you know, especially my oldest brother will get really annoyed or bored very quickly. So I have to launch him right into the good stuff, get him hooked on that. And then now, after he's been hooked, let him kind of play through after that.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. With Ocarina of Time in particular, I often wonder if people who played it back in the day just give it a pass today without really, you know, revisiting it and considering it, how well it holds up. I feel even like people at IGN, it's just like, it's just a given that Ocarina of Time is great. We don't need to scrutinize it at all. And I don't know. I haven't played it since it was released myself.
I've overly scrutinized it.
Okay.
Because I've always called it my favorite game of all time, and now it's not anymore. But I've also played it completely through and Master Quest completely through within the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I think it's super fun to play, even though I know everything in that game. So this is a good choice. I think it will hold up in its many states, and it's really good on the 3DS version. However, I would recommend you, if you're working with somebody that's played, you know, hasn't played a game, especially if it's really old, I really, really recommend buying them the print strategy guide. I think they're awesome. I think they're really fun to play through. And I think it provides a bunch of context that's made for beginners at the time, which might be more than enough for people now, but also might add stuff that you might not even realize. Like, I loved playing through Ocarina originally with the strategy guide. It's super fun to play through it now and reference it for like the 100 Skulltulas and stuff like that, you know, but it's really helpful. Like when I dip back into games, like I tried to play Earthbound, and this is a bad example. It didn't work for me, but like, I really wanted it to work. I wanted to get through most of Earthbound. I got through like the first three cities, used a print guide. And my favorite part of it was using the print guide. It was awesome. It was super fun to use.
It came with the print guide.
Yeah. And that one shipped with it. So that's a really good example. So that's one thing. And then the other is like, if you have the ability to do this and you're interested in it, it would be fun to set up a CRT and an old system and play those games the way they're intended with the right controllers with a friend, because there's just a lot that you get out of that. And I think when we had an old TV by our desk, the three of us, that was a really fun aspect of it. It was just like, hey, this is the original thing. Like, this is what it's supposed to look like. This is how it feels. And there's just like a good feeling to that. And obviously sitting in a garage where I can see, you know, four arcade machines with giant monitors next to me, that's different for me, but I hope other people can feel that way. It's a good feeling to go back to play old games that way.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, go ahead, Justin.
It's a very fraught topic that kind of rubs right up against, it's very adjacent to some of the worst parts of gaming and gaming culture and discourse that touches people, you know, emotionally and gets them worked up in a way that, like, I don't think is necessarily super healthy. You see a lot of Castlevania 3 on the NES is my favorite game. Like, play it. I didn't like it. And then they're mad, you know, and it's like, and when we talk about a game holding up, that's not an indictment of, and it doesn't mean that people's opinions were wrong when they liked it at the time. It's just that certain games and game genres and types of games benefit more from the passage of time and the advancement of technology than others do. Like Super Mario World, for example, like still feels just as good today as it did in the 90s, in my opinion, but certain games and certain genres don't. And it doesn't, they don't earn, you know, haven't earned their place in the gaming Hall of Fame, or that everybody's wrong. Like, younger gamers are often kind of attacked for this, for having a harder time getting into the classics. And I don't know, it bugs me. And I think it's kind of a flaw of this hobby that nothing else, no other form of art has to deal with this. Only video games have to deal with this, you know, albums and you know, paintings and books, none of it has to sort of grapple with the advancements in technology and playability and accessibility in the way that video games do. And it's kind of unfortunate that this hobby that I love, that's the sort of primary, you know, I don't know, interest in my life, does have this, what I would characterize as a fairly significant drawback to it.
What about talkies? Once you see a talkie, you'll never go back.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, it's tough. And I do have a curiosity and a fascination with, I really want to underscore and like double click on like the difference between some games aged better than others, but that doesn't mean that the game that aged worse is a worse game. It's not its fault. It's just the way that this culture and this hobby has developed over time benefits some games and some styles of games more than others.
Look, you don't have to go this far to make your point about Sonic. We get it.
I'm not even.
Yeah.
Justin, you just can't let it go, man.
It's interesting that Jonathan from Buffalo, New York's coworker was having a hard time with Z targeting because, I mean, it's just a lock on.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Right. That's very common today. Oh, I also wanted to say, Jonathan, dude, totally hold your friend's hand because otherwise they're going to bounce off the game. You know, it's like he's telling them like, oh, I don't want to tell him where to go or what to do. And I'm like, not like use a guide. Like,
yeah, that'll be annoying.
Use a guide or help them out. Otherwise, they're not going to finish it. So, you know, older games don't have those modern conveniences that people get used to. And so, you know, you can sort of manufacture them by just helping them out or letting them use a game guide to get through it.
Yeah, that's kind of like a universal pre-internet imperfection that games had. And we grant games a little bit of leeway now because you can use the internet to do anything. But like, I don't think games have gotten much better at that. Sometimes you just get stuck. You're like, I have this happened in Guardians to me, you know, like recently. It was just like, why is this cave the wrong thing I'm going down? I don't understand. Just like, it was just because I needed to slip through a crack in the wall, but didn't find it for a really long time. Stuff like that happens. Yeah.
No cave is the wrong cave to go down. There's surely something hidden there.
That's true.
Yeah, but then rockets.
That ended up being true. That's 100%.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. They do always mock you. Like, what are you doing? There's nothing there. Yeah. We clearly have to go in this direction. It's like, look, I know more than you, Rocket.
Yeah. I like when they mockingly, they mock him, but they're also like explaining it for him. He's like, oh, I'm sure Peter Quill has something really important on his mind. He's just formulating a plan for later. Right?
That's their dynamic because teasing is loving.
Mm-hmm. A lot of teasing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is RJ in New York City. It says, during Halloween weekend, I finally decided to purchase Resident Evil 4 on the Switch after years of hearing the praise as one of the best Resident Evil games. So I booted the game, and during my first encounter in the house, I noticed that I couldn't move while aiming. I immediately hated this game because it made no sense to me. A dude comes running with a chainsaw, and I cannot strafe or move away while shooting. I did not enjoy that at all and basically stopped playing. Is there a game mechanic that you immediately disliked and stopped you from enjoying a game?
Actually, to use a Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy example, so I'll just preface really quick by saying, I guess it's a bit of a gameplay spoiler because it's a little bit towards the end of the game. So stop listening now for like 30 seconds while I talk really quickly about this. But if you care about that sort of thing, but there's a section where you can actually pilot the Milano, your ship. And it's so late in the game that it kind of like catches you off guard gameplay wise. Cause up until that point, everything's really consistent.
You do it in the beginning of the game too.
Do you? I don't remember that, but that's fair. But then there's like a huge gap where you're not like, you know, playing with those controls, getting familiar with them. And you're basically launched into like, I guess kind of a micro boss battle of sorts. And you have to, you know, so there's like the pressure of these things. And then there's like some flying elements to it too, following that. And I just couldn't like quite, I generally don't like flying games in general. So that's just like my personal thing, like dogfighting games or flight sims or anything like that. So it was just an abrupt change for me, but obviously I didn't stop playing. I just kind of suffered through and dealt with it.
That part feels terrible.
It's so different. You're not trained for it. I think it makes sense because you do spend so much time on that ship. So it makes sense that there would be elements like that. And I do like when games surprise you when, you know, it kind of break up some of the monotony occasionally of gameplay. Like it can surprise and delight. And then other times it can just be really frustrating if you just happen to not be that kind of player. Yeah. So I'd say that, or as a personal thing. And then like some QTEs, man, like I just, you know, there's no skill to it really. It feels like kind of cheating interactivity into cutscenes. It's like, why didn't you just make this a cutscene and move on?
Yeah. Especially if you lose big time from them. Like if you don't complete it and then you have to like redo it.
And it's so silly. It's like, oh, you didn't press this button at the exact right time, which I guess that is a whole game genre when it comes to, you know, rhythm games, but it makes more sense in that kind of situation.
That's different.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's the whole thing that you mentioned was the exact thing I was going to mention. When a game that's not a driving or flying game, just all of a sudden out of nowhere, this next mission is a driving or flying mission.
Yeah.
I'm always like, what? That's, if I wanted to do that, I'd play a flying or driving game.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yakuza is super guilty of that, by the way.
Yakuza, like,
as much as I love those games, but not just the mini games, but like there's usually there's usually like a light gun, like a gun shooting section. That's just
Far Cry will do this. Now you're going to get in this helicopter. Someone else is driving, and you just have to shoot enemies on the ground with a machine gun. And I was just like, "What? This is like, it's just not what I want to do. I want to be in control of what I'm doing in this open world game."
Yeah.
Sam.
Yeah, I really don't like certain types of. I don't like cards. You guys know that, but I don't like certain kinds of menu situations, and the first. It's really the first three Metal Gears, but really Metal Gear Solid 3. I've tried several times to play that because I know people, it's like, that's my favorite game ever. So like, I love exploring games like that when, you know, somebody I respect and it's like, oh yeah, I'll totally try out this game. Tried it on, I think it was DS. I know it was 3DS and then the original on PlayStation. It's weird. There's a huge inventory system. You start with a bunch of crap in your inventory, and then you have to switch your gadgets a lot, and none of it's explained. It's all just like crazy complicated. And I came back to that game after much more streamlined Metal Gear experiences, especially 5 before, which is just like, you know, that game's about sneaking around, and the gadgets they give you are like, you gotta equip it, you gotta, like, you know, maybe expend something like ammo or battery or whatever, which is like totally unnecessary to like see where the enemies are. And otherwise, you get caught and have to start over. You know, like, it's way too complicated to be sneaky. And that really bugs me. And it's a combination. So that's like the menu stuff. And then also, man, if stealth is bad in a game and a game is like really about stealth, like, I cannot stand that. It drives me so crazy. If I can't just easily complete the mission when I screw up the stealth, that's a good solve. Like, I like that. But if it's like stealth and I've tried like 3 or 4 times, I'm like, this game does not give me the right tools to stealth. I will quit. I can't take that.
Justin,
I couldn't think of one.
Okay,
you can take one of mine.
A couple. No, of I mean, others.
Like, there's game genres that I don't like, but like, you know, I already know that it's like not to my taste, right? But I couldn't come up with like, you know, sort of a show stopping thing to the prompt question.
The other Resident Evil shooting situation 1 is a show stopper for me. I could never play those games.
What do you mean, Resident Evil 1
with the tank controls?
Yeah, you where you don't actually aim, you just like gun up or gun down. If you're kind of near a centipede, it might get hit by your bullets. It's so stupid.
Maybe it made sense at the time.
I guess so.
There's a couple of things. One is super common in games like Guardians of the Galaxy are guilty of it. It's when you're like exploring an area and then, oh, now you're locked in this room until you defeat all the enemies, and then the doors will magically unlock. I just think it's like a cheap way of artificially extending the experience, you know.
Don't play Death's Door.
Well, yeah, there's that too. and then what was the other one? Oh yeah, if failing or dying in a boss fight sends you back farther than the boss fight, Psychonauts 2 is guilty of that. If you fail in a boss fight, it'll send you back to like the beginning of that whole platforming area, and you got to do all the platforms to get back to the boss. It's like I don't have time for this.
Yeah, bad save structures are definitely a big one for me too. And sometimes even like there was this one section in Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy where you're just sliding around, and I wasn't getting like some of the jump timing right. And then on some occasions I'm like, surely this is the one. Like I hit that perfectly. And then I still fall to my death. And then every time you redo it from the top of the slide, or the effective slide, the dialogue repeats. And at a point of time, if you die enough times, like the dialogue can get really, really grating, and kind of like add to the feeling of failure too. So don't love that either.
There's a sinking and goo part of Guardians, which I had to restart a bunch of times, where it's the first time it tells you how to like do this button prompt where you push sticks inwards and then press X. And I was like, what is this telling me?
Out of nowhere.
Yeah. And then you have to listen to them. You have to listen to the whole conversation.
Yep.
Sinking, rock, and then it's kind of disturbing, like Rocket's like drowning stuff, and just like, this is horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did
that twice, but it's still super weird tutorialization moment.
Since I'm still early in Psychonauts 2, my biggest complaint so far is that you can't skip through dialogue. Because I'm a really fast reader, you know. So,
whoa.
Well, you can skip the scene. You can skip the whole scene. Yeah. I want something like Mass Effect-y. Where I can like, you know, get them to cut themselves off because I've read the subtitles faster than they're able to
start your next line.
Yeah, exactly. I'm there. Let's go.
yeah,
that's a good point.
But I definitely actually stopped playing Resident Evil and Metal Gear for those reasons. Those are the ones I can remember. A lot of other games, I'm just like, this is too boring for me. And then I stopped playing. It's not usually a mechanic for me. There it is.
There it is. There it is.
Sam, are you going to try to play it in VR? It's supposed to be great in VR.
No, I don't want Resident Evil on my face. I think that's such a bad idea. I love this game. It's one of my favorites ever. Top five game for me. And I just played a bunch of it on Switch. I loved the Switch version. It's just the same stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I should see what it looks like. But it's not like it's like an especially beautiful game to like see up close either. Like, you know, it looks like a GameCube game.
No, it just makes it scarier. I tried RE7 VR and like could not get through it. It was too scary. Oh
my God, I would never play that game in VR. It's just like it's people chasing you through hallways.
Yeah,
all the time.
Exactly.
Okay, and that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Joseph in New Zealand.
So, Kiwi.
Do what you will with that information, and let the questioning begin.
What are we supposed to do with that?
They probably had weird PCs instead of Nintendos.
Yeah, it's really only England that helps me out, because then I know it's a Spectrum game, a ZX Spectrum game. ZX, as they probably say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what we call hard mode. Unless Jared's here.
Well, we don't have the Halloween theme anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Womp womp.
What was the... We already had a successor to that, though, didn't we?
What do you mean? Like a Thanksgiving game?
Yeah, we had, like, turkey jokes.
Okay. Did this game come out during the fall release season? That's a new one.
So, yeah, seriously, so specific.
My research team is looking...
We can lobby a softball while you're looking that up.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Come out during the fall game release season.
Fun.
Is it part of a series?
That's tough. I guess technically yes.
Okay. So it's probably like a spin-off or something.
Yeah. Did this game come out after the January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Did this game come out on the Switch?
Yes.
Ooh.
Love it. Love it when it's on the Switch.
Technical Switch series.
Did it, was part of its initial launch? The Switch?
No, that's five.
So like it could have come out on PC first or something? Is that what you were going for?
Yeah, or like years ago. Like it's just an old game that's on Switch now.
That's how I took it. It's like something
I see.
Been brought to the Switch later.
Is this a Nintendo published game?
No.
Is it an indie game?
Yes.
Is it also on PC?
Yes.
Okay. And technically part of a series. Is it a multiplayer game?
No.
Do you like this game, Damon?
Yes, and that's 10.
Ooh, emphatic yes.
Cool. It's not Spelunky. That's obviously part of the series.
I was going to say that's what I keep circling around. It's like Slay the Spire, like all these kinds of games.
Mm-hmm.
We just had that on 20 Questions not too long ago.
Yeah, probably for the third time.
Maybe it's like I don't actually think Magic the Gathering Arena is on Switch, but maybe it's like some adaptation of some larger thing out in the world.
Hearthstone, Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah, like a Hearthstone. Is this game...
I don't think it's on Switch.
I don't know. Nobody knows.
Seems very on them.
Yeah, like, is there any Blizzard games besides, like, the Lost Vikings type stuff that's on Switch?
that's what Diablo I was thinking.
Diablo.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Was this game developed in the United States?
Yes.
I mean, it could be Diablo itself.
Yeah, but that's clearly part of a series.
Right. Not like series question mark.
Well, wait, and it was an indie game. So it, not Hearthstone.
Oh, crap.
Right, I forgot about that.
So. Developed in the U.S. U.S. made indie.
Is this game of cards in it?
No.
What about there were some demakes that were made by indies, like the 8-bit Bloodstained, or the mummy demake.
That's such a deep cut.
I think it's that mummy. Yeah. I think it's that 2D mummy game. What was that called? The Mummy Returns or whatever it is.
It was on Switch.
Yeah, it was. Wasn't it?
It was like 2 decades. It was like a decade ago,
no,
right?
No. I'm talking about the they made a game. I think it was Way Forward made the Mummy.
They also 2D. Do the Alien one, right?
I don't know. Is this game based off of a bigger license, like a movie license?
No.
Oh shit. Okay. There goes my harebrained scheme. I was so sure I was onto something with that. We don't know. Is it helpful to know if the game's 2D? I'm picturing a 2D.
I was thinking that.
Is the game 2D?
Yes.
Should we ask about killing?
Is
it a platformer?
I was thinking about platformer too. Is there platforming in this game?
Yes, that's 15.
It's a natural fit.
Cool.
Indie platformer. It's on the Switch. We don't really know too much about this game. It's made in the US.
Haven't there been spin-offs of Super Meat Boy for new releases that might not be a series?
There was Super Meat Boy Forever, the sort of semi-procedurally generated endless runner that I personally found deeply disappointing. But I don't know why that wouldn't just be part of a series.
What if it's based on a game from like a long time ago? Like it's based on a retro game, but it's, something else, like the new Strider type thing.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too.
Is this based on an older game series from way back?
No.
So that'd be Streets of Rage and stuff like that too. Okay.
Maybe Tina's right. I'm trying to think about how to dial this in.
Yeah.
For which one?
Just like modern platformer type stuff.
Oh, I think like Meat Boy Forever is like pretty credible candidate here, but I want to ask it in a way that's not like a stupid.
Not super limiting. Yeah. Like, do you play as meat?
Those are one-screen platformers, right?
No. They're scrolling stages.
Okay.
Is this game, so we know it's a platformer, we know it's indie, we know it's 2D. Does this platformer feature like a lot of kind of blood and like axe saws and stuff like that?
Shredded meat.
I think you're probably right. I think it's Super Meat Boy Forever. Is Team Meat the developer?
Yes.
Oh. There was like another, are we sure it's that one and not some like one-off? Because they announced something for Super Meat Boy yesterday in that Thunderful Publishing showcase.
That was a port of Forever to other platforms.
Okay, so it must be good. Then.
Yeah, Tina, you do it. It was you called it.
Is it Super Meat Boy Forever? Uh-oh.
That's your guess?
It's not. It's something slightly different.
Well, is there just Super Meat Boy?
Well, yeah. Is there? But wait, it's made by Team Meat. Wait, what else did they make? Maybe it's just Super Meat Boy.
That's the thing. I think it's just that like slight tweak. Is it Super Meat Boy?
Yes.
There we go.
It's okay. You cut out when you said forever, so we couldn't even.
There you go. That's what it is. That's what I said all the whole time. Yeah.
The original. And
that's awesome.
Super Meat Boy Forever just came out recently, and I guess I it's an auto runner, so I assumed it was it never came to Wii.
Yeah, well, I don't know if this is confirmed or if it's just speculation. Like it's seemed to have started life as like a mobile spinoff because it's an auto runner that you can then jump and dash by kind of tapping on the screen, but then But then, like, I bought it and played it on Switch, for example, and just really, really didn't care for it at all. Like,
it's so hard.
It's really hard. I mean, look at this gameplay. Like, this is incredible work being done here.
Meat Boy. Meat Boy's so good. The original. I remember this level.
If this is from our review, then that's my footage you're looking at.
There you go.
Goodness.
The first clip was, oh my gosh, the first clip was like a really tough, balancing of buzzsaws for sure. Look at this.
Great, I remember this one too.
Yeah, it's insanity.
This is from the heyday of Xbox Live Arcade and indie game explosion, 2010. It's interesting that WiiWare is on there. It did not actually come out on the Wii.
Weird.
And it never came to PlayStation 3 either.
Wow. Weird.
How good was Summer of Arcade, Damon? Like the three or so years that like that was in its heyday.
I still can't believe they just stopped doing it. It's like, we've got this great thing going. Shut it down.
Well, but there was just too many, like the indie game. There was too many good indie games. But like
eventized the release of some really, really good ones over a few weeks. You know, like just seems like a no brainer to me.
Just total bangers, like week after week for like several years in a row during Summer of Arcade. Yeah. That was a great time.
Now we get Super nothing over the summer.
Thank you for the suggestion, Joseph from New Zealand. Viewers and listeners, if you have your own suggestions for Video Game 20 questions, email them to me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to Tina, Sam, and Justin. Thank you to Mariah working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. We'll be back with a regular episode next week. The week after that is Thanksgiving. So if we can find some time to record an extra 100 questions episode next week, which I've got our coordinator looking into, we'll still have an episode for you the week. But everybody have good weekends. Play all the fun new games that are out. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. And we're out. Like fall.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.